Welcome to Northern Gold, a football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Cryle, and this week I'm joined by Paul Third and Andy Skinner. Folks, football's back. You've all been at games in the last few days. Are your hearts singing with contentedness?
Absolutely. It's been brilliant to get back. A bit weird, but no, just nice to get a feel for what we all enjoy doing again, I would say.
I feel like I'm in the twilight zone, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Right, coming up then, we'll attempt to dissect Aberdeen and Ross County's Premiership openers. Plus, there's the lower league fixtures to mull over, as well as other developments at Peterhead and Cove Rangers. But first, Aberdeen went down 1-0 to Rangers in their Premiership opener at Pittodrie. Paul, you were in the ground. How strange an experience was it, first of all, and how would you rate the Dons' first half performance on a scale from sluggish to lethargic?
It was, well, the build-up and the game itself was surreal. It's strange. Just to give listeners an insight who are wondering what it's like actually going to cover a game these days. The first thing you have to do is apply. Then you have to wait to find out if you're getting into the game. Then you get sent a questionnaire with 17 questions the day before the game that you have to fill in, just going through where have you been, what you've been doing, how you're feeling. Then you turn up at the ground at a designated time, get your temperature checked. During that process, before the game starts, you're kind of nominating colleagues in the media to go and ask questions on your behalf because they're restricted. I think there's only 15 journalists get in, and it's only more or less two per table to go and do the post-match interviews, the rest of us hanging back. So I'm assuming it's kind of be like that every week. Application for St Johnstone on Saturday is away. I'll wait and see whether I'm getting to go cover it or not. As for the game itself, I think the absence of the crowd was a huge factor. It is more technical. It's nice as a journalist to be sitting hearing what's going back and forth between the dugouts and the officials and the players. But Aberdeen switched off and were punished. There's no other way of saying it. Sluggish. It's my rating. Coming back to your question.
So I take it from that, Paul, that you feel that Aberdeen's performance, as I've seen a few people say, wasn't a worry if it's they build to a bit of form in the next game or the game after that. It's more a worry if that sort of performance continues, but it can be excused if it's a one-off given the circumstances, the layoff, the lack of the usual sort of competitive European action before the league starts and the absence of fans, yeah?
I think so. I mean, we'd be stretching it a bit at this stage to say that if the performance is anything to be concerned about. It's one game, the first game, after almost 5 months off. Rangers have been away to France to play in what I think have been more competitive friendlies, where the Dons have stayed in Scotland and played against other Premiership clubs who are similarly undercooked. I think we can all see that. Or they've played amongst themselves, an A team against a B team. I know some fans are frustrated at seeing their team give up the possession the way they did on Saturday, and they were looking to hit the Rangers on the counter at home. But when you open up, you leave gaps, and good teams will punish you. And that's what we saw on Saturday. I don't think you can be gung-ho in your approach in a game against a team with the movement and quality of this Rangers side. Aberdeen were in the game until the closing minutes when Andy Considine was sent off. And if Aberdeen had gone for broke and had been tanked 5-0, I would be uproar. I think it was the right approach for that particular game, but they lost a goal which was avoidable, and had one almighty goalmouth scramble ended with the ball in the back of the net, it would have been a draw. It's slim margins.
Obviously, Andy, you can jump in here as well because I'm sure you watched the game. Were you both a bit surprised then after the game to see Derek McInnes perhaps put the blame for the Ryan Kent goal that won the game away from his defence and almost, I think in the initial interview in Sky, dig out Matty Kennedy as getting the press wrong and allowing Rangers to come inside and sort of leave the Dons in disarray?
Yes and no. I mean, I suppose, you know, in a situation like that, the back line were probably, you know, the most obvious scapegoats. Perhaps it was more a sign of stuff that's more easy to work on to stop that situation happening at source that, is more fundamentally kind of easy to pinpoint. So, it was obviously a pretty basic goal, but it was also a very, very good pass from James Tavernier as well to set it up. You have to give him credit where it's due, for the speed with which that move was executed. But, certainly a goal that that was avoidable.
I look at it as a system malfunction, because obviously they've spent the whole week, maybe a couple of weeks, preparing for this game in particular. Matty Kennedy probably should be more alert to what's happening. There's a short goal kick being taken. He's obviously got a specific role that was expected of him in that situation, and the manager feels he hasn't done it. The instruction is to play a high line. You can see that when you look at the replays or the goal. And yet one player hasn't closed down his opponent quickly enough, or close down the space, whatever it is his role is. A couple have switched off and then they're in trouble. The ball has come a long way before it gets to Alfredo Morelos, who has the time to look up, turn and send Ryan Kent clear on goal. Taylor and McKenna are asked to hold a high line. I don't know what Ronnie Hernandez and Andy Considine's roles were in that particular situation. Are they supposed to be tucking in alongside their centre halves or staying wide? But something somewhere has gone wrong. Kennedy's got the brunt initially, but I'm sure there was more than one involved.
Yeah, I think the fact that when the initial pass was played through, or the ball went to Morelos, that I think McKenna had him covered, but Taylor sort of stepped across, and that was the sort of the second fatal mistake. Almost to, because it gave Kent that free run through the middle. But as you said, Andy, the pass to him was executed pretty well. Do you think, guys, that we can, after just one game, reflect on the performances of the individual players? Obviously, there were a few guys on show, the likes of Craig Bryson, who we didn't see a lot of last season and was never really fully fit. There was the returning Johnny Hayes. There was a debut for Ryan Edmondson. Bruce Anderson was up front himself. The thing that I would like to point out, first of all, that the three players that I'd like to see improve next time they're the pool on the red shirt is Kennedy, for one, because I thought Kennedy and Considine down the left-hand side, they looked a bit off the pace. I thought when both of them got the ball, it was a question of, are they gonna turn it to trouble? Are they going to get it under control? Or are they going to manage to get to one another? They didn't see to be a lot of ideas down that left-hand side when they were both there. And the other player, I think fans wouldn't be surprised to hear me single out, is Funzo Ojo, who I think had a bit of a beast early on in the game, but he seemed to grow into it later on.
A beast.
But, yeah, when he first got the first few times he got the ball, he didn't really seem to be able to get it under control. He kept turning into trouble, giving it away. Even there was a couple of instances where he'd give it away, win it back, and then turn into trouble again and give it away again. So, but I'm sure everyone's aware of that. Well, what about Bruce Anderson, though? Obviously, he was up front on his own. Bit of a difficult shift for him, yeah?
Oh, it was. It was. I thought Craig Bryson was Aberdeen's best player. But boy, was he fighting a losing battle.
Yeah.
And chasing down the ball in that opening half hour. I felt really sorry for him. As for Bruce Anderson, he had nothing of note. It was high balls, which are no use to young Bruce, I would hasten to say. Then Ryan Edmondson comes on, and he does offer a different option to Anderson, as he's got that physical frame. I think the manager said it himself after the game. Bruce is not 6'4". I don't know what Edmondson is, but he must be blooming close to it. He's someone who can hold the ball up. He was running into space. He was bringing others into play. You mentioned Funzo Ojo. I'm going to be nice to Funzo here because he's a nice guy. He was rusty and he was caught in possession quite a few times. You could see he was frustrated. But let's be honest here, there was a few guys who were off the ball, or off the boil, should I say, in both camps. I mean, Morelos sets up the goal, but as a goal threat himself, he was non-existent. Mm-hmm. It's easy to criticise players and look at your own team after they've lost a game. But looking at Rangers, they had guys who just weren't at it themselves, I felt. Alfredo certainly being the guy at the top of that list. For long periods, he looked disinterested.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was difficult circumstances for Bruce Anderson to come into the game, at the best of times, in trying to replace the void left by the talismanic top goalscorer in Sam Cosgrove. But even more so, just given the lack of opportunity to trial out a few friendly matches and find his place in whichever system Aberdeen were going to deploy in the opening game. There just hasn't been that opportunity to really persevere with different approaches. Normally by this stage, Aberdeen would have been coming into the league opener with a few European games behind them, and that they've generally been quite a good opportunity for the Dons to kind of build up through the gears, because the quality of opposition tends to kind of increase as the weeks go on. So just a very unfamiliar build-up from what they've been accustomed to. And as Paul alluded to earlier on, you know, there's no reason why Aberdeen can't still go on to have a good season, you know, despite what happened on the opening day. But, you know, it's just a disappointing start, but one that they can recover from.
To touch on something you said there, Andy.
It's not all doom and gloom, though.
Of course not, Paul. Of course not. But with Anderson, there appears to be an opinion among the fans, an opinion I share, and I'm sure that the coaching staff have seen this now from the game on Saturday, that, and it was maybe a case of the fact that Edmondson had come in quite late and you couldn't just stick him straight in, but a player of Anderson's build and the way he plays the game, as you said, Paul, he's not a physical player. He doesn't really suit that one up top, the 4-2-3-1 system that Aberdeen were playing, to me. And leading on St Johnstone game next weekend, would you like to see maybe a system of two up top where Edmondson and Anderson, the only two strikers that are really available, are maybe played together to see if they can kind of be a foil for one another?
Would I like to see it? Yeah, I'd like to see two up, but I don't think Derek McInnes, he could, I'm sure he could come on and give us a long explanation of why the system that he employs gets more out of his players and is the best way to go in games. I know it's a source of great debate.
That's an open invite, Derek, by the way.
Anytime, he'd be more than welcome on Northern Goal. I'm sure he'd have a lot to say too. Formations and lineups, I don't know. I mean, Niall McGinn and Ryan Hedges both look lively when they come on. But I don't see Edmondson and Anderson together as a two. I could see them potentially in a three. How's that for controversial? Whether it would be Hayes or Kennedy further up, or someone playing just off them. But I don't see them, two young guys like that, on their own as a front pairing.
Attack is the best form of defence, as they say. The last thing that really we probably need to discuss is the red card. There's been a bit of debate about that. I know you, Paul, got an email from a disgruntled email reader of the Press and Journal. But I'll just nail my colours to the mast straight away. I thought it was a red card.
Agreed.
I thought Considine was high. As Chris Boyd said, and not to agree with Chris Boyd, that he was unfortunate he got there first, probably because Arfield's going in off the ground as well. But I did think Considine's right boot certainly was higher than Arfield's feet were, although both of Arfield's feet were off the ground. And if he'd missed the ball and gone through Arfield's leg with a proper contact, which there wasn't really a proper contact, then it would have been pretty dangerous, the tackle. So do we think it was an element of frustration? Do you think it was a total accident? What do we think?
I think a total accident. I mean, I didn't have the benefit at the time of the replay, but I haven't seen it back since. I scribbled some notes on my pad. I can see why the reader who sent in the email and the screenshot to me felt that Arfield was the instigator. But when you look at it, Considine's foot is high and his studs are showing. It's one of those straight leg challenges. Arfield's gone in two-footed. He's coming down onto the ball, perhaps onto the pitch before Considine is getting there. But it's Considine who's the one who goes sliding in and makes that contact. Now, if Arfield gets there first, as you've said, and Considine's the one in a crumpled heap, we're maybe talking about a different outcome completely. But you have to go with what Bobby Madden sees and what happened at the time. And it's Considine who goes in. It's Considine whose force behind the challenge takes Arfield off his feet. That's why he's deemed a guilty party. And it is, by the letter of the law, a red card. Sorry, folks.
Cut and dry.
Yeah, it is reckless in the sense that his studs are particularly high when he goes in for the challenge. As you've said, you know, there isn't the massive amount of contact. And he does kind of connect with the ball as well. But it's just the height of the studs. It just gives Bobby Madden too easy a call to make, really.
Yeah, no complaints. That would be the short version.
We'll see if Aberdeen can get their first win of the Premiership campaign at McDermott Park this weekend. Another televised game for fans to enjoy. Next up, we'll discuss Ross County's opener at home to Motherwell. Ross County opened their account on Monday night for the season with a 1-0 win at home to Motherwell. It was a game of two halves, Andy. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes. I mean, it was a fantastic start from County. They were really, really sharp out of the blocks. And they played some really, really nice stuff, you know, throughout the first half. They kind of just kind of got better as the game went on, you know, in the first half. Really slick with some of their passing, which was one of the most kind of impressive parts of their game. You know, they're always a side that have shown attacking intent in games, but they just looked that bit more assured sometimes. There were some really nice, you know, movement and fluid attacking play. And there was a tangible goal threat at the top end as a result of it. A lot of different players contributed to that. I thought, you know, Ross Stewart was obviously very unlucky not to score before his penalty, which did open the scoring. Shot from a really acute angle, which forced a brilliant save from Trevor Carson. I thought Lee Irwin had a good game. He was lively and involved in a lot of the chances that were created in the first half. And Harry Payton was another big standout for me as well. Just the way that he was able to link, you know, the kind of defensive part of County's game. You know, there was a lot of balls coming to him just straight from the back line. A real effort to try and, you know, kind of keep the ball on the deck. And, you know, he was able to provide that link up with the attacking players. And, you know, it was him that won the penalty, which Stewart tucked away. Obviously, the second half, Motherwell did have a lot of pressure. And, you know, we'll have a very valid argument to say that they should have taken something from the game. But, you know, they were pretty wasteful with their opportunities and, you know, none more so than the penalty than they got themselves, which, you know, Liam Donnelly made a bit of a hash of, we have to say. But there were other chances for them. Callum Lang, who came on as a half-time substitute, was really lively prior to his red card. You know, there were other, you know, periods where Ross County did survive other, you know, slight let-offs, but no, a very, very encouraging start to the season and, you know, a brilliant foundation for the Staggies to build from.
Obviously, we were fully aware, Andy, last season that Ross County were good in attack. When Ross Stewart got injured, obviously, it felt Billy Mackay, but he picked up the mantle pretty well. They still look like they're pretty slick going forward. I'm sure they'll be delighted that Ross Stewart, if he's to stay for the season, is off the mark already, and he will surely improve if he stays for the whole season on the 11 goals he got last year. Ross County's issue was obviously defence last season, which, I mean, you discussed with Stuart Kettlewell. Can a point be made that given how much they were under the caution in the second half and that they didn't concede, although they did obviously ride their luck at time with a missed penalty, I think the Lang chance you will kind of know was the best one was the one where he headed straight at the goalkeeper when he could have put it anywhere else in the net and it would have been the equaliser. But can a point be made that County's defence is looking better than it did last season?
I think there's definitely a mixture of both. You know, they did ride their luck at times, no doubt about it. And, you know, they were fortunate, you know, with the chances that Motherwell missed. But I guess what you've also got to factor in is just how new a backline it was as well. You know, so for, you know, again, as has been touched on, the lack of, you know, preparation and games that County have had in order to have, you know, these guys playing alongside each other. You know, two new signings and young Josh Reid, who is also a debutant last night as well, 18-year-old, who was thrown straight into it. You obviously had Alex Iacovitti and Connor Randall, you know, brought straight in. Cole Donaldson has only been there since January. So, you know, it was pretty much an entirely new backline. So for it to kind of instantly withhold, you know, so much pressure, again, yes, there was good fortune involved in it, but the signs were there. They looked a lot more assured than they did at times last season. And, you know, I think you can certainly take a lot of encouragement from how you saw County defensively. Another aspect of you know, the defensive side of things that was noticeable was just the support that the back line was getting from, you know, players further up the pitch, particularly in the second half when, you know, the likes of Ross Stewart epitomised it. You know, he was having to cover so much ground, and there was a real desire from players further up the field to come back and really help out the cause when you know, the back line perhaps needed it. So all round, it certainly bodes well, I would say, without obviously getting too carried away. One swallow doesn't make a summer, but no, the signs were good.
The result is the important thing, though, because if you look back at that last season, what kept Ross County in this division was the start they made to the campaign.
Yeah,
and that's what they need to really build on, get a couple of early wins on the board, and suddenly you can be sitting pretty and well away from it.
I thought that Ede Vigers as well, as the new captain, it was very much a captain's performance in the second half. He won a lot of tackles when they were needed, you know, in and around the county box. Hamilton is the game at the weekend. They're basically making the same trip that Motherwell have made up to Dingwall last night, but then in reverse, down to Motherwell's neighbours. Hamilton had despite getting beat 5-1, there were a lot of positives. I watched that game as well, to take from their performance. Both teams will be viewed nationally, I'm sure, as being teams that are in and around the relegation zone come the end of the season. But they both showed they've got a bit about them. Does that make it quite an intriguing affair?
Yeah, I mean, picking up on the point that Paul made there about, you know, the importance of getting early results, I mean, none more so than games against the likes of Hamilton, because, you know, when you look at, you know, where County finished last season and also where they'd been for most of the campaign, that although they were never overtaken by Hamilton, you know, you never got the feeling they were that far away from them. You know, they were certainly in the dogfight come March. So, you know, if they were to get a few results on board against, you know, teams like Hamilton that, you know, might be down there, might not, you know, you can never discount them, you know, overachieving and, you know, having a good campaign in the same way as, you know, the likes of Livingston have done in, you know, previous years. But, you know, if they can steal a march on some of the other teams who are fancied as being, you know, relegation battlers, then, you know, that could give them a real sense of breathing space in the months to come, you know, if they do perhaps lose a bit of form, or if they, you know, have a few injury setbacks as they have in recent years as well. So, as Brian Rice said himself after the Celtic game on Sunday, you know, Hamilton won't be judged in games against the likes of Celtic. So, you know, this they did come out away from that one with a bit of creditability. You know, it was a decent performance. You know, they're certainly a very young team, Hamilton, but they gave it a good go. You know, they showed no fear on the day, and maybe that proved their downfall in terms of trying to get a result there. But it certainly set up to be an interesting gauge of whether the Staggies can make it back to back wins on Saturday.
You've reminded me that I need to give an honorary mention to Brian Rice, who was in the game, or at the game, sorry, at Dingwall last night. Despite the fact he's obviously come up from Hamilton and that the game was live on TV. So Brian Rice obviously doesn't have Sky in the house. Anyway, next up, we'll discuss the lower league fixtures. Obviously, they affected Cali Thistle, Elgin City, Peterhead, Cove Rangers. They're all involved in those. So we'll see what the season holds for those four teams. Andy, you're the expert here. We'll start with the Championship. Cali Thistle, safe to say they've got a very tricky start to the season, and should they be in the mix for the title, which I'm sure they'll hope they will be come the end of the season, it's a bit of a tricky finish as well.
Yeah, very much so. They start the campaign away to Dunfermline. Yeah, I mean, it has to be said, the record against Dunfermline has been very, very strong over the last couple of seasons. You know, they won't fear that one. In any way, they won there twice last season. The key to that was keeping Kevin Nisbet quiet on each occasion they played them. He's obviously not there now, so you know they will probably go down and fancy their chances. But then obviously back-to-back home games against Ayr and Arbroath, who again have been two of the you know the biggest achieving championship clubs of recent years. Of course, the big test then comes a week later, away to Hearts at Tynecastle, which yeah, it's going to be a massive test for them. And you know, it's one where if they are going to provide any real challenge to what is going to be predicted as being a, you know, a Hearts title surge, then you know, you'd have to think that they would need to try and get something from that one, just to lay down an early marker, because you know, with the shortened season down to 27 games, an early start, a good early start is going to be really, really important in order to make sure that you know, they don't lose any ground on their rivals.
I do fear that everyone in the Championship is playing for second place this season, because Hearts, I think, are just going to have too much for everyone. They can't be as bad as they were in the Premiership last season, surely. Where that leaves Carly Thistle, I don't know. They're the one of the toughest teams to predict what sort of season lies ahead of out of all the clubs in our patch. The players have been in furlough for months. Shane Sutherland's really the only new guy in the building so far, and there's clearly going to be more changes ahead. It's really a watch this space at this point. We just don't know how this is going to pan out.
That was actually what I was going to say, Paul, about the signings. Obviously, Andy, you've had a piece in the PNJ today with Scott Gardner, who was discussing the fact that they're kind of biding their time. Apart from Shane Sutherland, they're going to wait and see about recruitment, but they've lost players, and you're thinking, God, they need to make sure they've got enough to actually have a tilt at it. What I was going to ask you about, Andy, though, was obviously we must touch on Scott Gardner also stoking conspiracy theories by saying that Inverness, it's funny that Inverness have got to go to Tynecastle twice in Hearts, and already the champions elect have only got to come to the Caledonian Stadium once. What's your view on that?
I mean, I think there was maybe an element of him being slightly flippant with that remark, but I think it does underline just how, you know, seriously clubs in the Championship will have been looking at that fixture list and hoping that they could play Hearts twice at home, just given how big an away support they're going to take. You know, it's just going to be a guaranteed, you know, five-figure earner every time. Just given the disparity between, as I say, Hearts away support and that of, you know, just about every other team in the league. The other thing to factor in, perhaps, is, you know, Inverness at home to Hearts might be one that, you know, is looked upon as being a good candidate for a Friday night slot, which is when the Championship games are played, and, you know, the effect that could perhaps have on the crowd as well. So, you know, I think Scott Gardner will definitely, just as every other chief executive and chairman, will have been looking at that that fixture list and hoping that you know, they were given two home games against Hearts, but obviously some teams are going to have to miss out on that, and others are slightly more fortunate.
Very diplomatic of you. the League One fixtures have obviously also been released. The big one we were looking for, obviously, was that two of our teams will be in the same league next season, and when they'd be playing each other. We don't have to wait long. It's the second round of fixtures for the first Northeast derby between Peterhead and Cove, which will be taking place at Balmoor. They'll be desperate, won't they, that fans are able to come into grounds by the time that one rolls around.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I hope this is a new rivalry. We need one. I'm not sure what we're going to call it right enough. We'll maybe have to have a think about that one. We've had, what was it, El Kesico up north. I don't know what this one will be.
It's the Rory...
Peterhead or Streetwise, though.
The Rory McAllister Derby, I believe.
The McAllister Derby, that's it. Okay. Peterhead or a Streetwise side, that's what I would say, with a manager who's worked an awful long part of his career in the lower leagues. He knows how it works. It's going to be a tough division, League One, next year. I'm not sure just who's really going to be in the running in terms of our Northeast clubs. In terms of the fans, yes, of course, Peterhead and Cove are going to be desperate to get fans in, because as every club in the lower league, because they need that money. They don't have the TV revenue, and punters through the gate is what keeps clubs alive.
To move on then to Elgin City, we will come back to a couple of Peterhead and Cove issues. Obviously, Cove had quite a big week last week. Peterhead had a few comings and goings as well, but just to touch on Elgin's fixtures, they get the horror start. Elgin on a season where they'll be hoping to make another, at least tilt for the playoffs, I'm sure. They get the long and winding road to Stranraer on the first day. Andy, you spoke to Gavin Price. What was his reaction to the fixture list?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a mammoth trip. I don't know if either of you have ever been to Stranraer away, but it's a long and winding road, that one. In fact, I think I did it for a midweek game all years ago when they played against Ross County. But no, big journey to begin with. But Gavin Price has been quite optimistic about, you know, where his team stands ahead of the new campaign. The key for him has been retaining the bulk of his squad. Obviously, the major loss for them is Shane Sutherland, and the key will be whether they can replace his goals. But they've got Kane Hester, who has, you know, similarly done well for them in providing the goals in recent times, and Smart Ossa Delor, as well as new Joel McBeth that's come in as well. So he's very optimistic about what that sort of stability is going to do for Elgin this season, because they obviously had a large number of their first team signed up for next season already when the uncertainty over the next season all began. They went into the furlough period with pretty much a team already signed up for next season. So although that created uncertainty when it came to the finances of the club initially, it's something that there does certainly count in their favour when it comes to planning for a tilt at the return to football in October.
You led into this perfectly, Andy, there, but talking about lower league teams and having players signed up and already committed for the next season. Obviously, Peterhead, in the last few days, they've announced that six players are leaving for a variety of reasons. I must say, not just that they couldn't agree new terms, the likes of Paddy Boyle moving on for reasons involving their working lives, Jamie Stevenson kind of getting on a bit, deciding he needs to be a bit closer to his home down south. They've also announced that seven more players have committed to stay on. That's kind of 12 players I think they've now got in total that have been retained from last season, the likes of Lenny Wilson, the goalie, Jason Brown, Ryan Conroy, Gary Fraser, Derek Lyle and Ben Armour. They're all going to stay on. They've also brought in Gary McKenzie, who I'm sure everyone knows if they've been paying attention to the Premiership the last few seasons. That seems like a bit of a coup. And Isaac Lane, striker, who's got plenty of League 1 and League 2 experience. But I mean, it's safe to say there'll still be quite a lot of signing and wheeling and dealing to be done at Peterhead before the season kicks off.
Well, I think that's clear. I mean, you look at Jim McAnally's squad, as you've said there, Ryan, and it's been slowly but surely dismantled. It's going to be a new look Peterhead team that takes to the field in October if we do start on that date. And clearly, it's going to, I would think, if you look at the squad from last year and the one from that first game, you're probably, well, look, if you've got four or five faces from last season going to be in that starting 11. It's going to be a new look team. But what I would say is, if we look at Jim McAnally's history and what sort of sides he's put out, not just at Peterhead, but at other clubs he's worked at in the lower league, they've always been competitive. They've been hard to beat. But the same issue goes with Peterhead, I suppose, that Elgin have. With Elgin losing Shane Sutherland, we don't know what knock-on effect that's going to have for them in League 2. Likewise, in League 1, Rory McAllister cutting his career at Ballymore to an end last season was a big blow for the club. And how they're going to fill in the gap of the guy was so heavily relied upon for the goals. It's what we're going to have to wait and see when the new campaign gets underway.
Okay, finally, this week, I must mention the fact that Cove obviously have been confirmed as playing in League 1. Next season, the SFA arbitration panel's ruling that Hearts and Park Thistle would not be reinstated in all the relegations and promotions from the curtailed season last time around. removed essentially, that wouldn't be happening. So Cove getting that richly deserved step up to League One after such a good season on their debut in League Two last year. That concludes this week's episode of Northern Goal. Thanks, of course, to Paul and Andy for joining me today. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, you can like and subscribe on your favourite podcast app and email any questions or comments to northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. Finally, enjoy the football, however you're watching this weekend. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.